Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a great day. Winston Moss is an outside linebackers coach for the Green Bay Packers. I would guess that before yesterday, you didn't even know that. You're like, if I said Winston Moss, you'd be like, Randy Moss's brother. Is he a guy that got a shot as a wide receiver because he's Randy Moss's brother? That would have been your guess. Winston Moss tweeted this. Ponder this. What championship teams have are great leadership, period. It's not the offensive guru trend. It's not the safe trend. Find somebody who's going to hold number 12 and everybody in this building to a hashtag Lombardi standard, period. Hashtag losing sucks. So what happened to Winston Moss? He lost his job. Here's Joe Philbin, the interim head coach, longtime Packers assistant two times over, on the reason behind the firing.
It's important, obviously, that everybody's on the same page, that we're all moving forward in the same direction. As you know, Winston's an excellent football coach. I've known him a long time. Respect him, an outstanding family man. So it wasn't an easy decision, but I just didn't feel like the fit right now was where it needs to be, and so came to that decision. No, I mean, it's never about one thing, you know. I mean, it's we got to be professional, accountable, respectful, and punctual. Those are the four things we got to do these next 4 weeks, and if we do all those things, we'll be in good shape. You're talking to a guy who's never tweeted in his life, doesn't even know what Twitter is. So, you know, again, it's not about a tweet or anything like that. I just think the fit right now isn't what it needs to be.
Yeah, you could say it's not about a tweet, but it is about a tweet. Now the Packers have come out and said this is not about Aaron Rodgers or the fact that he put number 12 in there. My guess would be this is one of the issues that companies have. Is that companies are so scared of controversy that even when something is not really controversial, that when all of a sudden it gets retweeted out there, it becomes controversial. Like, that is an innocuous tweet, isn't it? Hey, man, we don't need an offensive guru. We don't need a save. We just need somebody. Great leadership holds everybody accountable, including number 12. Now, if you want to parse it, you know, if you want to cut it up and say, oh, whoa, we mentioned Aaron Rodgers and accountability. Somebody's not holding Aaron Rodgers accountable. Must be Joe Philbin. Right? That's the problem with 140 characters. Is people can take it however they want. They don't know tone. They don't know sarcasm. Even when you do hashtag sarcasm, it still doesn't come across as sarcastic if you don't want it to. If you don't want to. Twitter can get deciphered however the reader wants it to. There is no ability to provide true context. None. I've suffered the wrath of the consequences of social media mongers jumping down my throat for something I tweet. Sometimes it was taken in the tense that it was, but it's not the end all be all. My guess is it wasn't Aaron Rodgers. My guess is just, what are you doing tweeting about who our next head coach should be? And Winston Moss was probably just trying to say he was all in. Hey, I don't care who you hire. I don't care. Just find me a good leader and I'll get behind him. This is a guy who played for a decade in the NFL. This is a guy who's been in Green Bay for over a decade. You don't fire a guy with a couple weeks to go in a season unless something went wrong. And what went wrong is he gave the appearance of somebody who wasn't pulling in the right direction. We told you, you heard it from Joe Philbin. Hey, we need everybody pulling the right direction. Here's Jimbo Fisher when he took the Texas A&M job talking about what it takes to be successful.
Scott was one of those guys that I always said if I ever had the opportunity to work with him again, because I say this all the time in coaching, you can have Vince Lombardi, Tom Landry, Chuck Knoll, you can have the greatest coaches in the world. But if your administration doesn't see things in the way you see things and allow you to do things that way, nothing can be achieved. You have to be a one. There's a oneness to everything you do to be successful. And I knew he had the same visions that I did. Just like Scott said, he felt that about me. I felt that about him back in his excellence. With Chancellor Emmert at that time, who's now the president of our NCAA. And they allowed us to do the things in which we had to do to be successful.
There's no question that there's probably a divide between offense and defense. And remember, Winston Moss had been there through several different defensive coordinators, and there's the chance that he would have been out at the end of the year. And maybe this is a glimpse into the breakdown between a longtime assistant and another guy who's gotten previously a shot, getting another shot, right? Like Joe Philbin has gotten a shot as a head coach and failed before. That said, like you can't tweet about things at work. You can't. You know, even if, and it, if you do, it has to be overwhelmingly positive, because if it's neutral or yet you can read in any way into it, somebody will take some negative from it. I read Winston Moss's tweet. I thought it was like, what? That's what he got fired for? And you can tell, well, it wasn't just a tweet. Sure, it wasn't just a tweet, but he wasn't getting fired before the tweet. Right? So it was the tweet. That was the straw that broke the proverbial camel's back. Even if you were going to part company at the end of the year, like, that's embarrassing. And when Joe Philbin's like, look, I'm a guy who's never tweeted before, that means that it got to him through a bunch of different layers in the game of telephone. Did you see what Winston tweeted? Does it matter? Aaron Rodgers didn't have anything to do with this because he doesn't have to. Right? This is more about working for a corporation. This is more about 2018 people not realizing that any sort of Twitter controversy will in fact pass. This is more about let's find a way to parse 140 characters and make it into something negative, even when it's innocuous when you really read it. And the argument for the Packers getting rid of a longtime employee is, can you name any other staffer in the NFL that is tweeting about a need for leadership in their locker room? I've told people this story before. I'll tell you one quick story. Mac Brown's new head coach in North Carolina. And he was speaking at a young coach's clinic. And he went around the room and he asked coaches how their season went. And the guys that said, you know, coach, we didn't have a great year. We had this problem. We had that problem. He cataloged that in his brain. And he went back as soon as they're done. He went back, went through every guy. He said, you're fired. You're fired. You're fired. You're fired. And they were like, why? Why would we be fired? You're going to let a complete stranger into your locker room and tell them any of the negatives that are going on inside the locker room? Look, everybody in your building knows that there are issues. That's why a coaching change was made. The last thing you want to do is tell them what the issues actually are. And that's why Winston Moss got fired. He's not wrong. You can be right, and you can be out of a job.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Jim Harbaugh has done, I think, a terrific job of rebuilding Michigan's football program. I think the way in which it's constructed, my belief is that he has built it to last, much like what he did at Stanford was built to last. Now, remember, he did not see the Stanford thing through. He did see University of San Diego relatively through until he went to the San Francisco 49ers, got them to a Super Bowl, didn't win a Super Bowl, but that wasn't because he didn't stay after the Super Bowl. So maybe there's a sense that he doesn't mind leaving before the task is completed. Maybe that's what it is. But I heard this from First Things First earlier today. This is Chris Carter, who is, obviously, an Ohio State alum, with his own sources telling him this about Harbaugh.
Watch out for Jim Harbaugh, because Jim Harbaugh potentially is trying to get his way out of Michigan. All right, I got good sources that are telling me not only Green Bay, but also watch out for the Cleveland Browns. He likes the quarterback situations there. And I believe that there is front office people in Green Bay who are enamored with Jim Harbaugh and potentially trying to get him to come to Green Bay.
Okay, so like, here's what happens. Chris Carter is an Ohio State guy. Chris Carter's a Columbus guy. Oh, Chris Carter's only saying this because Ohio State now, going through a coaching change, wants Jim Harbaugh out as well. Right? That would be Homer college football logic. And I think there's some of that is reasonable, right? Like, we talked about this yesterday that, hey, man, it yesterday was a pretty good day for Jim Harbaugh. Pretty, pretty, pretty good day. I mean, if you stop and think about it for a second, like, man, what's sitting between Jim Harbaugh and winning Big Ten titles or winning national titles? It was Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer's gone. I'll take my chances with a guy who's only coached three games so far in his life. Right? I just will, whereas I'm Jim Harbaugh. I think that's a reasonable amount of confidence to bordering on arrogance. So I think yesterday was a good day for him. And I also think that there's a chance that some of what you're hearing is maybe not Ohio State stuff, but previous to Ohio State losing their head coach. He's gone 10-3, 10-3, 8-5, 10-2. Let's say he wins the bowl game and they go 11-2 on the year. That's pretty amazing. That would mean so far this year, counting, you know, this year, four out of his last five seasons in college football, going back to Stanford, he's had double digits in wins. But he has not competed for, nor has he won, a national championship yet. So the goal has not fully been accomplished, but he resuscitated Stanford to being a dominant power, and he's done the same thing at Michigan. I'll give you a couple logical reasons why it's possible. Why it's possible. One, no one's going anywhere unless they know what the quarterback situation is. You're not going to succeed in the NFL long term unless you're stable at quarterback. Secondly, college football, though the money is better now than it's ever been, and Harbaugh is a perfect example of that, it's reported as $9 million. It's really more in the $5 million variety. What coaches who make a crazy amount of money do is they have these life insurance plans, which are investment vehicles. The schools pay for them, but they don't actually pay you don't actually pay $4 million in life insurance. It's into a policy, and that becomes an investment, and ultimately you can live your life out of that investment vehicle like 5 years into it. It's like it's a really good rich guy thing that people are doing, where you gotta get worked in your life insurance. But normally when you had like term life insurance, you just put money into something and you don't see any of it back. This is not the case. And this is what all these guys are making at top end do. And it's a way to make more money without the school spending more money. And also it's usually not paid for by the school. It's paid for by something else that you're doing for the school. But the money has gotten really good, but there's more money, more problems, right? That's the old 1990s song and movie and saying. More money, more problems. It's true. Between transfers, I mean, first you're fighting what Ohio State has, which is you do so well in recruiting that guys want to go to the NFL the second they become draft eligible. And if they're not playing, they're not bought into staying, you know, to see the process through, they transfer out so that they can play somewhere else right away. So it hits you on both ends if you're at the top level. And I do think that the image of coming back and coaching at Michigan sounds better than actually coaching at Michigan. It's a lot like going to school, right? The idea of going to a school like Michigan or going to Notre Dame, and that's a great thing. Then you're going there like, it's kind of fun, football weekend, sort of. Then you get done with college, and when you come back for a weekend, it's way more fun. Your image of college is prettier than college was in reality. Like, there's a lot of boring days. There's a lot of things you study, a lot of things you do that you're like, you know what? I could have done without that. College coaching is the same. I've talked to several guys who coached in college in basketball and coached in the NBA, and they're like, I don't recruit. I just coach ball. I have no limitations on when I can coach guys or how I can coach guys. I just simply have to do my job. And then when we're off, we're actually off. I don't come into the office. We're off for like a month. Like, I don't come in. I'm out. Which is never the case in college athletics. But even though Jim Harbaugh has not completed the task in terms of winning a Big Ten title and winning and competing for a national championship, he also hasn't beaten Ohio State. And so I can't see him leaving Michigan, no matter how much better footing the program is on, unless he beats that team from the other state. I think that's a reasonable thought that most people have. Can I see him going back to the NFL because college football can become tedious and tiresome? Absolutely. Absolutely. Could I see him doing it this year? No, because I can't, even though you don't have to complete the task of winning a national championship, I think that's just, it's almost unreasonable. I do think you got to at least beat your arch rival one time. And that day's probably coming next year. You know, new head coach, probably coming next year.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Every week we have this guy on, and every week I'm sitting there just saying to myself, man, okay, remember to ask him this, remember to ask him that, remember, because I get kind of lost in conversation. I'm like, ooh, I forgot to ask Greg Cosell about said team. So I'm ready. I'm prepared. He joins us every week from NFL Films and kind enough to stop over with us and spend some time. And let me start with what changed last week is the Kansas City Chiefs lost their running back. How do you think that affects them? We've only seen them one game against the Oakland Raiders. They have the Chargers a week from tomorrow night. How do you think this changes them as we get ready for the playoffs?
You know, Doug, I don't think it changes them dramatically from a scheme standpoint. They're a very schemed offense. Obviously, they've got good players, and Spencer Ware is not the same talent that Hunt is. But I don't think it will affect them dramatically because the way they sort of scheme their pass game, I think Ware, who's done those kinds of things in the past, by the way, people forget that. He did some of those kinds of things as far as a route runner when Alex Smith was the quarterback. I don't think it will impact them much at all in the pass game. The difference could be if they get in games where Andy Reid decides he wants to run the ball, let's say in the second half, and then maybe eat some clock or run to win, as is often the phrase, you might see an impact there. But in the pass game, I really don't think you'll see a significant drop-off.
What did we learn about the Chargers from their comeback against the Steelers?
I don't know if we learned a ton. I think Phillip Rivers is a quarterback that plays every snap as if it's an individual snap. I think what happens previously is not really important to him. You know, I think that their defense, we always talk about the Chargers with Phillip Rivers, as we should, but I think their defense has good players. I think the return of Bosa is critical. I think they have a pass rush that in the third and fourth quarter of games when you need pass rush, as Bill Walsh always said, pass rush in the fourth quarter. I think that they now have the opportunity to do that. So I think we learn probably a little more maybe about their defense in critical situations on the road than we did about their offense, which we knew already.
What about the Steelers? The converse side to it is they have a big lead. They turn the football over.
Yeah.
Yet again, what's your takeaway from watching the Steelers lose us for a second consecutive time?
Well, you know, I've been a little surprised over the last three, 4 weeks that the Steelers have so gone away from the run game. And maybe that sounds old school, but I thought there was a stretch there where James Conner was probably averaging 18, 19, 20 carries a game, and they were running the ball exceptionally well, and they had very good balance in their offense, and I think they got away from that. I don't know why, but you know, at its core, I think it's very hard to be one-dimensional in the NFL. I know there's a ton of talk constantly now about college offenses filtering up into the NFL and all the different concepts that spread the field, the misdirection, the RPOs, all the different things that theoretically make it really hard on defenses, and they do to some extent, Doug. But I think when all's said and done, there are points in NFL games when you need to line up and run the ball. And I know the Steelers have gotten away from that.
Yeah. Yeah, and now they don't have their starting running back for at least this weekend, maybe for a couple of weekends. Greg Cosell joins us. He's an executive producer and analyst for the NFL Matchup Show with Matt Bowen and, of course, Sal Powell. He's worked at NFL Films for 39 years, a co-author of The Games That Changed the Game. He joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Houston Texans, you buying?
Yeah, well, I am to a certain extent, sure, for a number of reasons. First of all, their defense over the last 4 or 5 games has been tremendous, and that's where I think a lot of what they do starts. They've got a dynamic front seven. I think they've got some potential issues in the secondary that any given week could theoretically be exploited, but I think their front seven at times can compensate and camouflage for that. Secondly, they've done something that has probably been overlooked over the last 6-7 weeks because of all the focus on Deshaun Watson. And Watson's played well, but what they've done is they've reduced the number of times he drops back every week. They've relied far more on the run game. I find it interesting that our teams now are relying more on the run game as we sort of head down the stretch run. Sure. Lamar Miller is on pace probably to rush for 1,250, 1,300 yards. People are probably not aware of that. And as I said, they've not asked Watson to drop back quite as much because as good as he can be, I think there's too many sacks, there's too many potential negative plays because he's still working through being a refined pocket player.
Let's talk about the Cowboys. I haven't talked to you since the Cowboys really slowed down.
Yeah.
Slowed down the Saints offense. Let's start with the Cowboys defense and what they were able to show, what they were able to do to stop an offense which seemed virtually unstoppable. How'd they create favorable matchups from what normally the Saints find as mismatches?
Well, it's really interesting because I wish I was smart enough to have known this before the game. But when you really look at the Saints offense, and I'm talking passing game now, with the exception of Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara, they don't really have anyone you'd view as, hey, we have to stop this individual.
Right.
They've got a lot of nice players who are schemed within Sean Payton's scheming and Drew Brees' ability to find the right matchups. But they don't have great individual weapons on the perimeter. So what the Cowboys did, Doug, is they said, you know what, we're going to match up and we're going to play a lot of man coverage. And we feel we can do that. And we feel that our pass rush, which is very, very good with the stunts and the games we play up front, can at least get in the face of Drew Brees and make it a little more difficult for him. So that's what they did. They didn't do anything flashy or unique. They played a lot of man. The one thing they did do on third down is they brought in a sixth defensive back and played dime. They don't normally do that because they wanted Jordan Lewis, their sixth defensive back, to match up to Alvin Kamara so that there'd be, in a sense, an athletic equivalent rather than, let's say, a linebacker. They didn't want to get stuck with Van Der Esch or Jalen Smith matched on Kamara. And that's the only thing they really did. Other than that, it was pretty straightforward. Let's line up and play, and we'll play a lot of man coverage.
Yeah, yeah, really, really interesting stuff that they were able to do with that man coverage, and it exposed the fact that the Saints, especially Ted Ginn Jr. out for the year,
yep.
they don't have anybody that you fear outside of those two weapons, and they
and Michael Thomas is great, Doug, but
he's not
really a vertical threat.
Yeah, yeah, no, great route runner, obviously catches everything, but not a burner. And I don't know, and look, you do this a lot of different places, and of course, I follow you and Matt Bowen and Sal Powell on Twitter. I know you guys do all your breakdowns. How much do you pay attention to Jameis? Because it feels like last 2 weeks especially, he's played good football, and we all kind of left him out to pasture, like, Jameis is going to have to find another job, fight for another starting job. Lo and behold, Fitz plays poorly. He gets back in there, and I feel like he's played pretty well, but you watch the tapes, the all-22s. How's he actually played?
And I've seen both games on tape, and I thought last week he was still a little undisciplined and a little erratic despite the numbers. I thought, you know, he wasn't as disciplined as he needs to be. This week I thought he was better. He had one throw this week that probably should have been intercepted, and it was a red zone play, so that would have been problematic. He did make a number of plays with his legs this week, both getting out of the pocket, throwing the ball, and then some runs. Now, he walks that fine line, Doug. This week, they were positive plays, and they were big plays. He made a number of plays against zone coverage that the Panthers played, and when you move like that, it breaks down the discipline of coverage, and no coverage is meant to hold up for more than really 2.5 seconds anyway. So he was very successful doing that. But he certainly still has a tendency to move, and then he needs to be able to do this without turning the ball over more and more, because he's still playing essentially the same way. He just didn't have the turnovers this week.
All right. Cam Newton was playing so well earlier in the year. His defense obviously has some issues. They fired a bunch of defensive coaches. But offensively, four turnovers, you're not going to win when you have four turnovers in the quarterback position. What's changed with how Cam Newton's played the last couple of weeks?
I just think he had a bad game. You know, a couple of them he was hit. You know, I think it's a case where their offense has been playing well. He's been playing well. They've been able to run the ball with consistency. His turnovers gave Tampa a number of short fields, which led to points. So it's just, unfortunately, their defense had been a little more of an issue in previous weeks, and that's why they had lost three in a row. And then you get into a game where their defense, quite honestly, did not play that poorly, because I watched the tape. And then the offense did not hold up its end of the bargain because, as I said, the Bucs were able to score because of short fields a number of times. So it was just a bad game for Cam, his worst of the season. And now they're in a situation where I would assume they have to win out, and it'll start this week. They're at Cleveland, and that's not an easy game.
Yeah, I want to ask you about Cleveland, because we talked about the Texans, but we didn't talk about Cleveland in that game. They picked off Baker a couple of times.
Yep, three times.
What were and it felt like all three were his fault. One Cunningham kid, that the linebacker,
right,
freak athlete. What a great play he made on one of those picks. But what was it that Baker Mayfield showed that was a flaw and led to those three turnovers?
Well, you know, it's funny because the first two were against cover two. And it's funny because I thought that he was decisive with his read. He believed that the throw was there, so he misread the coverage. And I think that's a learning experience, but he was very decisive. There was no sense that he was uncertain in his mind as to where to go with the ball. He just obviously did not read the coverage. And, of course, Cunningham's play was really, really good. And if I'm not mistaken, they kind of disguised their cover two look on that one, and maybe it caught him because, as I said, he believed he had it. But I tell you what stood out about Mayfield watching all of that game was his confidence as a passer, because he threw three interceptions in the first half, and obviously they were down big. But he continued to turn it loose in the second half, and he made some tough, tight window throws that, you know, you have to have confidence. You've got to be willing to make those throws, and I believe that's in his DNA, and I believe that will help him develop and be a really good NFL quarterback.
One last one I want to ask you about. Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio, as we're catching up with Greg Cosell, executive producer and analyst of the NFL Matchup Show. Of course, you see him on NFL Films as well. He's been there for 39 years. He joins us on a weekly basis here on the Doug Gottlieb Show, helping us know what's really going on when you watch film. A lot of talk about Green Bay Packers, a lot of talk about their offense. How much of this is Aaron Rodgers needs to clean some stuff up? How much of it is the lack of maybe discipline and execution from some of the wide receivers in terms of what needs to be cleaned up?
You know, that's a great question, and I think it cuts both ways. You know, you're in this business of talking every day. I mean, Aaron Rodgers as a talent may be as good as we've ever seen, but I think, and we've talked about this a lot, and I've talked about it a lot, I think he's a fascinating evaluation and always has been, because he's the kind of quarterback that can make something out of nothing. He can also make nothing out of something. And those plays hurt you from a sustaining offense perspective, where the ball should be thrown and it's not. And I can't answer why he doesn't do that. Only he can tell you that. But it's going to be very interesting what they do, because if you look at the situation, and I'm sure you've been talking about it, but you know, a lot of people assume that, well, he's going to have a say. I don't know if he really has any leverage here, because what's he going to say? I want to be traded? That they're going to trade Aaron Rodgers after signing him to a big deal? I mean, I think you need someone to come in. I assume they'll hire an offensive guy, but I don't know that. And then Aaron Rodgers is going to have to fit into that system and execute the system.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. I think it's going to be fascinating. You have to bring in somebody he respects. On the other hand, does somebody that he respects want that job because they worry about the pushback you're going to get from Aaron Rodgers? And there's a lot to it. Greg,
yeah.
Go ahead.
You're right. No, it's a fascinating situation. But on the other hand, you know, great quarterbacks like to be coached.
Yes,
I can tell
I
you a great story. We don't have time about Joe Montana.
We have time. Go. We have time.
Joe Montana, after his first year in Kansas City, he's already a Hall of Famer. You're right, he's played forever. He's won Super Bowls. After his first year in Kansas City, he called up Bill Walsh, who was out of the NFL at that point, and said, Coach, I think I struggled with my mechanics a bit this year. I need you to give me a tune-up. We need to spend some time together. That's what great quarterbacks do.
That's, I think it's what all great whatever do, right?
Correct. I would agree with that.
Yeah, is that if you really want to be great, you have to want to be coached. Now, you know, like some guys challenge that in LeBron James. I think one of the things that made Kobe great and Jordan great was that they liked that Phil Jackson would coach them. Now, you have to, the messaging is not the same for the 15th guy on the end of the bench. And the same thing, you know, Tom Brady, while I don't think he loves some of the messaging, I do think that he likes the fact that he's coached in New England. That's the big challenge, though. Everybody says they want to be coached. Everybody says, even in our business, Greg, that they want feedback. Then you give them some harsh feedback and they get really defensive.
Correct.
Can you do it without being defensive?
You're right. Well, we'll see where it goes. It's going to be interesting.
Your phone's ringing. I'm sure you got another radio interview to do. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Doug.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Let's catch up with the division champion who just went back into his former house and claimed victory. That's Ndamukong Suh. He joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. What was that like to go to Big D, get a win, and come out as division champion?
It's a great feeling. Obviously, I started my career there. Many great friends and family in that city. So it was a great place to share a championship and bring it back home to L.A.
Is there, you know, one of the things that happens when you leave a place is, you know, no one gives you, unless you retire, nobody gives you a chance to kind of say everything you want to say. And as much as you're a guy that is emotional on the football field and super thoughtful off it, you never really, at least as far as I know, said what you wanted to say about your time in Detroit and how you felt both coming in and going out. Are there any last words for the folks of Detroit?
I don't think there's any last words because I don't see myself not being a part of that city or going back there and spending time there. So I think what you're referring to is my time playing as a Lion. And really, I think they understood my goals and my understanding of wanting to be dominant and play at a high level. And I think I left there on a very high note from that respect. But I'll be going back to that city many more times. And I spent a lot of time there in the off season. So I don't think there's anything for the fans. They can come up and talk to me as they do when I'm in the city all the time.
When you signed with the Rams, you signed a one-year deal, mm-hmm. What did you think? Like, what did you honestly think it would be like?
A great opportunity. I'd watched him from afar the previous year when I was in Miami, keeping tabs on my good buddy Ted Rass, who's a strength coach here. Saw a lot of successes and always was always curious of it. And obviously, got a great opportunity leaving Miami in March and had an opportunity to go back to the old school ways of taking visits and meeting people and looking them in their face, being able to see how they run their organizations. And I think I made a wise decision to come here for a year and then be able to get back to the market.
Yeah, you're going to do it all again this upcoming offseason. What's different about the Rams than you thought before you end up becoming a Ram?
I think the biggest difference is the leadership. The way that this organization is ran top down is pretty amazing in my feet. I think I've seen only one other head coach that's been able to be very successful within their first couple years, and Jim Caldwell was that for me the first time around. I was with him in 2014 in Detroit. And then obviously being able to hear all the great things through Ted about Coach McVay and then being able to live it now, his second year, it's been great.
And Ndamukong Suh joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. There are some that are saying, hey, Aaron Donald might not just be the defensive MVP. He should be the MVP of the whole league. This is a new one for you, though, right? I mean, like, look, you like to work alongside other guys, but to work alongside another guy that gets that much respect, how do you emotionally handle that when people are fawning over Aaron Donald, who's great, but one of the reasons he's great is he's got you on that same defensive line?
Yeah, I think it's great. I think Aaron, that without question, deserves an opportunity to be looked at as an NFL MVP. And I think defensive players overall don't have the luxury of being able to be thrown in that conversation. So I'd love to throw his name in there. He continues to play at a very, very high level each and every single week. There's really no letdown, and I get to see that. Why? The reason why I get to see that is because he's in the weight room, in the meeting rooms, sharing time and seeing how he studies alongside myself. So being able to just be a part of his success from in the shadows, which I enjoy, and that's naturally where I'm at anyways. I've always been a behind-the-scenes type of guy. And so it's good to have a young, fresh face like that carry the torch, and I'll keep pushing them along in the best ways I can.
And Ndamukong Suh joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Chicago this week, so you basically go back to the Midwest. Now you got to play outdoors. But again, it's a place you played a bunch of different times. And I don't know if you've experienced this. I mean, look, you spent a couple years in Miami. You spend now this season in LA. I've experienced this. Like, I was in Connecticut 12 of the last 16 years. It hits 50 degrees and it feels so much colder than 50 degrees used to feel like when I was on the East Coast. Are you ready for the weather changes?
Oh, I love the city of Chicago, and I've spent a lot of time there. When I was in Detroit and even in the off season, around business ventures and close friends. So that cold weather I'm looking forward to, they'll take care of us. I've heard some good things about they've finally taken care of their field conditions there. So we don't have to worry about that. But no, Chicago's a great football city, great fan base. I can't expect anything less with that stadium to be rocking. And, we look forward to going against that team that's been playing at a very high level and put up a lot of points on them.
Yeah, we had Prince on a couple weeks ago. What a great guy. Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Is it statement game? Like, is that too lame to say? Like, look, it's one thing to play a team like the Bears. It's a game you want to win. You want to get a home field advantage throughout, especially with the Saints losing, going back to last week. But this is a team you could face in the playoffs. Does that make it even more meaningful that you want to win? You want them to know, hey, your place, our place, doesn't matter. We're going to smash you.
I think we can't really focus on the playoff pitchers and those things. So they're going to iron themselves out, as they always do, once it comes to the last couple of weeks of the season. I think the most important thing that you mentioned is that we have an opportunity to lock up the second seed at the very minimum for us, and that's a part of one of our goals. And so being able to go out there and go in any type of weather, any type of conditions, and get that done is something that this team needs to focus on, and that's what we're driving our motivation towards. So let's focus on that one piece and then be able to accomplish everything else after that.
You mentioned college. I still think, like, I thought Marshall Faulk and you were the most robbed Heisman Trophy participants. Like, I remember when you played in the Big 12 championship game, and they're showing videos of, like, you being triple teamed and still beating triple teams. Like, look, the award says for the best college football player in America, and you were the best college football player in America. You just played a position that didn't normally get the amount of attention. Does any of that, like, do you still watch the award show? Do you even care about the Heisman Trophy, considering you didn't win it when a lot of people thought you were the best college football player in America?
I can't say I sit here and watch it anymore. I obviously pay attention and see it come out in the news. But the AP Player of the Year did me very well that year. And that's obviously the award that I won for Player of the Year, and I hold that in high regards. The Heisman is known, in my opinion, for being a bit very offensively minded one. I think they've only got a couple of defensive guys, and it's been a long time since they've had a defensive guy, to say the least. So I think that's why and that's even more of a reason for Aaron Donald to have an opportunity to be an NFL MVP versus just a defensive player of the year. So they got to give us a little bit more love on the defense, but people can't forget defense wins championships. So you got to look at those as well.
Well, we will see if defense does, in fact, win you guys a championship. Look forward to seeing you on the field against the Bears this weekend. Thanks so much for your time, and we appreciate you being our guest on Fox Sports Radio.
Thanks for having me, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right, that's Ndamukong Suh of the LA Rams joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show.